rest and stays behind. She doesn't. If this is some kind of ploy to try to keep Boone, you're going in the wrong direction. He can't handle a woman whose career is more successful than his. He'll scrape you off as soon as he finds out you were even here. I knew I was going to get him back, but this just seals the deal. Excuse me? I repeat, this time not playing dumb, but seriously confused by what she's saying. Do you need me to break it down into smaller words for you? You and that dumb redneck, I swear. And I've officially heard all I need to hear. I hold up my hand. First, shut your face. If you want to talk shit about Boone, you're not going to do it around me. I've thrown men 3 times your size out of my bar, and I guarantee I'll have no problem kicking your skinny little ass. Second, Boone didn't want you because you're a cheating whore on top of being a self-righteous bitch. So chew on that, Amber. If you ever think you're getting him back, you're sadly mistaken. He's too damn smart to fall for your game again, and you'd have to do it over my dead body. Her mouth drops open, making me wonder if this is the first time someone has given her an ass-ripping using her own brand of meanness. You don't know shit about shit, girl. You won't make it in this business. You're a joke. I'm not the one who cheated on my boyfriend and married another guy in Vegas. That was all you, Amber. By the way, thank you for fucking it up so royally that he fell in love with me. The elevator doors open and I step out, but she's right on my heels. He doesn't love you. He still loves me. I know it. Is that why he left the engagement ring he was going to use to propose to you as a tip at the bar the night he found out what you did? Her eyes nearly bulge out of her head. What? Her screech fills the lobby of the building. You lost the best thing that ever happened to you, but you better believe I'm a hell of a lot smarter. All you had to do was treat him right, and Boone would have been yours. Now he's mine, and I'm not giving him up. I spin on my heel and make the exit of a lifetime, set to the sound of Amber Fleet's meltdown. When I step out onto the sidewalk, the truth about what I said hits me. I'm not giving him up, because I'm in love with him.
36. I come home to an empty house around 1 o'clock. My radio interview ran over because I got sucked into telling them about the album I'm writing and how I've never had song lyrics rolling through my brain nonstop like this. There were a lot of questions about the tone of the album, but I deflected and told them they'd have to wait and see. The note I left Ripley this morning on my pillow has been moved to the counter, and under what I wrote, she added a response. Going to meet with Holly at 11 a.m. My lips stretch with a smile. That's my girl. I'm lifting a piece of fried chicken out of the bucket when the door from the garage opens and shuts. I wait for Anthony to call out that he came inside to get some lunch, but instead Ripley blows into the house like a tornado. I don't care what that bitch says, you're never going to be dumb enough or desperate enough to get back together with her over my dead body. Ripley slaps a silver envelope onto the kitchen island with a decisive smack. She can scream and cry and rant all she wants, but you see right through her now, don't you? Ripley's chest is heaving, and when she puts her hands on her hips, I recognize a woman on the warpath. I choose my words wisely. Sugar, what are you talking about? Amber! She showed up at Homegrown after my appointment, screeching at the receptionist about wanting to meet with Holly, and then she turns her venom in my direction. I told her she was barking up the wrong tree if she thinks she's ever getting back with you because you are mine. She punctuates each of her last 3 words with a slap of her hand on the island. So I'm sorry if I overstepped, but I had to put it in terms she'd understand. I drop the chicken into the bucket and come toward her. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. There was more, but I'm not wasting another minute thinking about that woman. I crowd Ripley against the counter and meet her thunderous gray gaze. I agree. I'd rather talk about your meeting with Holly. Before we get to that, you need to tell me what the hell you did with my car. I lean in because her lips are dying to be kissed. I nip at the bottom one. I stole it. Ripley's hands flatten against my chest. We already covered that fact. That's all I'm telling you for now. Drive the BMW until I tell you otherwise. With a shove, she pushes me a step back. You know, Holly and I talked about what it's like to be with a guy who thinks he can do whatever he damn well pleases. I used the distance she put between us to grab her hips and lift her onto the island. Oh yeah? What else? I tug at her lip again with my teeth, and Ripley's fingertips dig into my shoulders as she presses against me. You're distracting me. Welcome to my world, sugar. You distract me just by breathing. And now you're all riled up, the only thing I can think about is feeling that fire beneath me. Her voice comes out in pants.
I'm strangely okay with that right about now.
Then wrap your legs around me, because we're moving this conversation to bed.
Do we have to?
I meet her eyes. The first time I fuck that tight little ass of yours isn't going to be on the kitchen counter. We can save that for the second time.
37. Apparently, it's going to be a day of firsts. My insides go liquid at Boone's words, but my legs wrap around his hips. I've been thinking about this more than I care to admit since he initially brought it up, and today, of all days, is the one I would have picked, too. Today, I conquered my fears and seized my chance at an amazing future, a future I desperately want to include this man. And not just because of how incredible he makes me feel in bed. The dirty, sexy side is a definite bonus, though. When we get to the bedroom, Boone takes his time stripping me down to just my bra before reaching for his own shirt. No, let me. I rise off the bed and peel his t-shirt over his head before dropping to my knees in front of him to work his belt. Boone must read it in my expression, because he starts to protest when I wrap my hand around his cock.
Sugar, I told you.
Stop. I want to give this to you. Boone threads his hands into my hair.
What the hell did I do to deserve you?
I've been asking myself the same thing. I decided that we both got lucky.
This isn't luck. This is hitting the jackpot of life.
I wink. Just wait until I do this, then. I wrap my lips around his cock and suck him into my mouth. Boone's fingers tighten on my hair, and I love the slight tug of pressure. Sucking deep, I feel tears gather at the corners of my eyes as the head of his cock hits the back of my throat. His groan fills the room.
Goddamn, sugar.
Taking that as his stamp of approval, I keep going, feeling the answering pulse of heat between my own legs. I want him. Want this. And for the first time in my life, I'm going to have it all. I continue working Boone's cock with my lips, tongue, and hands until he pulls free.
You keep sucking me so good, I'll be coming down your throat instead of where I planned.
His gaze is heavy on mine.
You trying to distract me? You change your mind?
I shake my head. No, I was just setting out to prove I'm no quitter. The smile that spreads over Boone's face is everything.
Sugar. I could have told you that from day one. And guess what? I'm not either. You and I are in this together. Every step of the way.
He pulls me up to my feet and takes my lips, making even more silent promises. When we break apart, Boone spins me around and presses a hand to my shoulders. I bend over the bed, my ass in the air.
Sweet Jesus, woman. Your curves never quit.
He lands a heavy hand on my right ass cheek with a smack. Heat shimmers in the shape of a handprint on my skin. Oh, God, this is going to be intense. But today, right now, none of the boundaries that I'd put around my life and my dreams matter. Today, there's nothing stopping me from reaching higher and taking more. Life won't smack me down this time. Boone drops to his knees between my legs, spreading them wider with his broad shoulders. What are you-
Hush. I'm gonna play.
And that's exactly what he does. Boone's tongue darts out as he licks me from behind, setting my nerve endings on red alert. I press up on my toes, not trying to escape, but to give him more room.
So fucking sweet. I need more.
Boone rises to his feet and flips me over on my back after unhooking my bra and leaving me completely naked. Before I can catch my breath, he's on his knees, his head between my thighs, sucking my clit between his lips and sending me over the edge. All my inhibitions are swept away by the second orgasm that slams into me after he plunges two fingers inside, teasing my G-spot until I scream.
Soaked, Sugar. Fucking soaked.
My eyes flutter open to see Boone licking his fingers clean. Oh my God. I'll never get used to that. After he fists his cock, he thrusts inside me, fucking my pussy with long, hard strokes.
You're too damn tempting. I had to,
he says on ragged breaths.
But don't worry. We're getting there.
Boone winks and lifts my hips higher, hitting exactly the right spot. While I'm coming apart, he pulls free, yanks open the door to the nightstand, and pulls out the lube. I start to roll to my stomach, but Boone stops me.
I want to see your face when we do this.
How? This goes to show just how much I don't know.
Bring your knees up.
It sounds obscene, but I do it anyway. When Boone's blue eyes turn flame hot, I know the indecent position is perfect. No one has ever looked at me like he does. No one has ever treated me like I mattered. No one has ever put me first. He's it. He's the one. The knowledge sweeps through me, coinciding with Boone's thumb lubing me up and coating his cock before he fits the head against the hole that was previously a no-go zone.
You ready, Sugar? We'll take it slow. You want to stop? You say the word, and we stop.
I'm done stopping. I'm done taking it slow. I want this, Boone. I want you. He leans down to take my mouth in a deep kiss at the same time he presses inside me. I suck in a breath as he keeps his forehead resting against mine. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
You okay?
I nod, even though okay isn't the word for what I'm feeling. Exhilarated and one step from losing my ever-loving mind would be more accurate. Holy hell, why did I put this off so long? Boone continues forward until his balls touch my ass.
Sweet fucking Christ. This may not last long. You're so goddamn tight.
Strain marks his forehead, and sweat beads on mine.
Gotta move now, Sugar.
Do it, please. Boone reaches between us to press his thumb against my clit as he pulls out and then surges back in. My scream takes us both by surprise, and so does my almost instant orgasm.
Boone!
His name echoes off the ceiling, and I don't care who hears it. I lose myself to the sensation as he continues to thrust while teasing my clit. Oh, my God. Within minutes, I'm limp, and Boone empties himself inside me with a hoarse shout of my name. My eyelids flutter closed, and I'm boneless, floating on a cloud of pleasure I never knew possible. When he finally pulls free of my body and returns with a damp towel to clean us up, I'm still without words.
Come on, let's get you in the shower.
Boone lifts me into his arms and carries me into the bathroom, not setting me on my feet until we're in the glass enclosure with the water beating down. My limbs are unsteady, but I have Boone to lean on, and I finally let myself do exactly that.
38. With Ripley in one of my t-shirts and a pair of boxer shorts, we make our way back to the kitchen. I'm starving, she says over the rumble of her stomach. Then let's get you fed. I snag the bucket of chicken from where I left it and offer it to her. Oh, hell yes. She tears into a piece and shoves the silver envelope on the counter toward me with her free hand. I said yes. Well, technically I said I'd say yes after a lawyer gives me the all clear. Only Ripley would be so casual about signing a record deal. This calls for champagne, Sugar. I spin around and yank open the fridge to grab my just-in-case bottle of Dom from beside the ketchup. When I pull it out, Ripley laughs. It's such a cliche that you keep bottles of Dom handy in your fridge. You never know when you're going to need to celebrate. Plus, Ma loves this stuff, and I keep it on hand for her when she comes. Ripley shakes her head at me, but watches as I produce two glasses, pop the cork, and pour. It's like you've done this before. A time or two. Life's too short not to celebrate every chance you get. And today, this is all about you. I'm really fucking proud of you, Sugar. I think you're making the right move. Cheers to you and an amazing future. She accepts a glass of champagne and lifts it to clink against mine. Cheers to us. Because I wouldn't be in this position if not for you. She pauses. But I don't want you to ever think that me falling in love with you has a damn thing to do with this, because it doesn't. I freeze with my glass to my lips. What did you say? Her face goes soft, losing that guarded edge she's always had. I'm falling in love with you, but it doesn't have anything to do with... I come around the island and lower my glass to the granite. Stop right there so we can get a couple things straight. First, you're not falling in love with me, Ripley. You're already there. You've been there since you charged a bowl to get to me. Maybe before, but that's when I knew it for sure. I will never think this has anything to do with it because you've made it clear in every word and action that you don't expect a damn thing from me. But you know what? That just makes me want to give you even more. Because you won't ask for it. You don't expect it. I pause and meet those stormy gray eyes. Ripley, if you'll let me, I'll give you everything. A smile turns up the corners of her trembling lips. How about we start with you giving me my car back?
39. I fell asleep with Boone wrapped around me and woke up the same way. In the early morning hours, he made love to me in his bed, telling me how beautiful I was and how glad he was to have me in his life. Before we drifted off again, he whispered, "Never letting you go." I feel the exact same way. When I wake up the second time, it's to an empty bed. I pop out of it when I hear a door close somewhere else in the house. I toss Boone's t-shirt on and make a mental note to bring some clothes over later so I'm not constantly stealing his. I peek my head out of the bedroom, and my jaw drops. It appears Boone beat me to it. He walks toward me loaded down with two duffel bags that I recognize, and a box.
"I went to Hope's and got your stuff. I was going to ask if you wanted to officially move in, but I decided to skip that step."
"Are you sure?"
"Abso-fucking-lutely. I want to be able to wake up with you every damn day."
Maybe it was the early morning orgasm, or maybe the fact that the glow of my declaration of love is still so fresh, but I decide not to argue. "Okay." This time it's Boone wearing the look of surprise.
"Okay."
"Yeah, I'm good with it. I mean, Esteban is already here."
I knew keeping the parrot was a smart move.
Boone winks at me and carries my stuff into the bedroom. 2 hours later, I finally pull on my own clothes, and Boone and I head out to meet with one of his lawyers to go over the contract. Holly already sent it to them via email, and now he wants to go over the details in person. "Don't you have something else you should be doing?" I ask Boone as traffic slows near downtown.
"Something more important than making sure you know exactly what you're signing up for with this? Definitely not."
"But I thought you were supposed to be writing a new album and—"
"I did."
My head jerks to the side. "What?" Boone's smile could light up the cab of the truck.
"Turns out you're a hell of a muse. I've written 47 songs since the day we met, and 14 of them are going on my next album."
"Are you serious? Holy shit."
"I know I make it look easy, but I worked my ass off when you weren't around so I could take every chance I had to spend time with you."
A warmth spreads through me, and I reach out to squeeze Boone's hand. He doesn't let go, but instead keeps our fingers interlocked all the way to the parking garage. 2 hours later, my signature is on the bottom of a contract with Homegrown Records. Boone's lawyer, actually now my lawyer, negotiated the points he had issues with over the phone with Homegrown's counsel, and we made a deal. Once my signed copy is emailed to Holly, I get a call. I put it on speaker because it's only Boone and me in the small conference room now.
"Hell yes, girl! This is going to be freaking phenomenal! Get ready because we're prepping the press release, and you're going to be on everyone's radar in a few hours."
Boone wraps his arm around me and pulls me into his lap. "Thank you so much for the opportunity, Holly. I'm incredibly excited."
"You and me both. Gotta go. I'll be in touch."
Boone presses a kiss to my forehead.
"I think it's time for another bottle of Dom and a hell of a fancy dinner."
40. It doesn't take long for the news to spread like wildfire. Boone and I left the restaurant a few hours later, and the cameras were flashing along with the questions being tossed at us. Instead of answering, I waved and climbed into the back of the SUV Anthony drove us in, expecting this kind of reaction. My phone immediately started going nuts, too. It seemed that every single person I've ever known has something to say to me now that I'm somebody. After I told Hope the ink was dry on the contract, I didn't answer any calls. Hope was thrilled for me, but sad that I was leaving the White Horse, although she did extend an invitation for me to come back and perform anytime I want. Even her making the offer was surreal. I turned my phone off for the rest of the night, and when I turn it on in the morning, I immediately wish I hadn't. 17 new voicemails. File those under nope, not happening. Boone and I are making breakfast in the kitchen after an amazing morning of shutting out the world when Anthony pokes his head inside the house.
Boss, I got a guy out at the gate who's looking to talk to Ms. Fisher.
I close the fridge after retrieving a carton of orange juice. A reporter? I ask, which is just another indication of how much my life has changed overnight. Holly was absolutely right about that. Anthony shakes his head and holds out a card.
Says he's a private investigator.
That's when I remember the mortgage Pop took out on the fishbowl to hire a PI. Boone grabs the card and brings it over to me. Morton Twining, private investigator. I look to Boone. He has to be the one investigating Mama's murder.
You want to talk to him?
Both men are watching me as I weigh the question. Finally, I reply. I want to put the past behind me so I can move on. Let it go. If he's figured something out, then I want to know.
It's totally up to you, Sugar.
I give Anthony a nod. Let him in.
Will do, boss lady.
Anthony shuts the door behind him, and Boone glances down at my bare legs.
You might want to find some pants first.
Morton Twining is quite possibly the most unassuming man I've ever met. He can't be more than an inch taller than me, and although his frame isn't frail, it's definitely not bulky. His light brown hair is thin on top, and his khaki-colored jacket conceals a red and blue plaid shirt tucked into khaki pants. He's very blah. Once we're seated in the living room, introductions out of the way, Mr. Twining asks his first question.
Did you publish any songs under your name about 20 years ago, Ms. Fisher?
What the hell?
Excuse me?
Boone stiffens on the couch beside me. Mr. Twining pulls a folder from his brown leather briefcase and lays it on the coffee table.
Since I took on this case, I've been doing a lot of digging in odd places, and one of those places led me to four songs published by Ripley Fisher and Gil Green 20 years ago.
The name Gil Green stands out like a beacon. Gil Green was my mother's... They were... Twining nods.
Yes, I'm aware. Which is why I thought it was odd that your name was attached to them. The royalties have been accruing to a trust in Green's estate all this time, and no one thought anything of it until his wife passed away about 3 weeks ago. The lawyers couldn't figure out who Ripley Fisher was, and why she was the beneficiary of this particular trust.
Boone squeezes my hip.
That's really friggin' weird. Indeed. Which is why I wanted to confirm with you that these weren't part of some pet project you and Green might have done when you were a child.
I shake my head.
No. I only met him in passing a couple times. He gave me a guitar once. We never had any kind of relationship.
Twining shuts his briefcase and rises from his seat.
That's it? I suspect I'll have more questions for you, and the estate will be in touch. Soon, I'd bet. I'm getting closer, but the trail is taking an unexpected turn.
Unexpected how? He dodges the question.
I'll be in touch, Ms. Fisher. You can keep those copies. I thought you might like to see some of what I assume is your mother's work.
And with that, Boone leads him out of the living room. Well, isn't that just the weirdest freaking thing? I pick up the folder off the table and flip it open to the first page of sheet music. It's a duet about forbidden love. Nope, not reading it. It's not like I need more proof of my mother's infidelity. The name of the second song gives me pause. Envy Green on the Vine. The lyrics are terrible, but I read them anyway. It's all about wanting what someone else has and wondering how far they'll go to take it from you. shivers prickle into chill bumps on my skin. Who were they writing about? My mom being envious of Gil Green's wife? Or someone being envious of what my mom had? I get to the final verse and read it 3 times. From the stage in that bar, I play my guitar, waiting for a knife in my back. But as we pile on those lies, I thank God that I hid the truth behind old Willie's eyes. It feels like it should mean something, but it makes absolutely no freaking sense. Who would Mama have been waiting for a knife in the back from? Or was it Gil who feared someone? And what the hell does it mean to hide the truth behind old Willie's eyes? Boone comes back into the living room. You okay? I nod and look back at the lyrics again before handing the page to him. Will you read this? That last verse is totally throwing me off. He takes the paper and his eyes move back and forth as he reads the words.
How can you hide the truth behind someone else's eyes? That part doesn't make sense to me either.
I have no idea. It doesn't... I cut myself off. Wait. Willie. Willie Nelson. There's a picture of him in the bar. What if this really is about my mama and she hid something behind it? I know I sound crazy, but my suggestion isn't that much crazier than these lyrics.
Behind the picture? Really? You think she would have?
I don't know, but if she were going to hide something, that wouldn't be a bad place. It's not like anyone would look. Those things are screwed to the wall. No one ever moves them, and nothing has been added since Mama died. She was the one who put them all in frames and hung them herself. Boone sits down on the couch next to me.
You really want to dig into this?
Part of me wants to say no, because I've just accepted an opportunity that's going to completely change my future. But a bigger part says now is the time to put the past to rest so I can let it go. This has been hanging over my head for 2/3 of my life. It's always been the unanswered question, and I feel like I need closure. Maybe then I could move on and focus on the future. Boone nods.
All right. So what do you want to do?
I think I need to go to the fishbowl.
41. Going back to the fishbowl wasn't on my list of things to do today, but there's no way I'm letting Ripley go by herself. Last we heard, Ripley's dad hasn't been arrested or charged based on the video evidence that had gotten the charges against me dropped. I suspect it's because the cops want to put the case behind them, rather than getting involved in proceedings that will constantly highlight the fact that they screwed up. Even so, Brandy knows Ripley turned the tape in, and I'm not taking a chance of Brandy getting a shot at her. On top of that, I don't care if we're talking about a 20-year-old cold case. The murderer is still out there. Can you pull up the security feeds on my laptop? See if there's anyone there? Ripley's eyebrows shoot up. That's a good idea. Have a few of those now and again. She rises on her toes to press a kiss to my lips. How about you have an awesome idea later when we're naked? Deal. She flips open the laptop and pulls up the website. Except instead of seeing the inside of the bar like I did the last time she pulled up this page, it's just black. Ripley hits a couple of keys and nothing happens. Damn it. They must have disabled the cameras after the cops confronted Brandy with the video. Shit. So that means we're going in blind. Ripley nods, but there's a new apprehension in the set of her shoulders. If we can get in at all, what if they change the locks? I guess we're about to find out. We load up in the truck and head downtown. The fishbowl looks completely empty from the outside, no cars out front and no one parked in the back. When Ripley reaches for her door handle of the truck, I put a hand on her thigh. If your cousin is inside, I doubt she's going to be happy to see us. With a grimace, she replies, True. If she's inside, then we bail, and I move on and leave this for the PI to handle. You sure? She bites her lip. I really want her not to be there. Then let's go. I hold out my hand. Keys? She drops the keys in my palm. All right. If we do run into her, you're telling her you left something behind and had to come back and get it. She doesn't need to know anything else. I agree. I could be coming back for that ring, the one you left in the bar, that you got for Amber. It's still here. I hid it so Brandy wouldn't find it and hawk it. I wanted to get it anyway. There's no point in leaving it here. The engagement ring is basically the last thing I ever want back, but if we need an excuse, it'll work. Fine, but we're unloading it immediately. I don't want it around. That's fair. We could sell it and donate the proceeds to charity. Deal. Now let's get in there and get out. I climb out of the truck, shut the door, and walk around the front. Ripley's beside me when I shove the key in the lock and turn. Click. It opens.
Oh, good.
Ripley whispers as she follows me inside to the bar. It's dark and quiet, much like it was the day of the bird napping. Ripley pulls a penlight from her pocket and flips it on. Really? She shrugs.
Seemed like a good idea so we don't have to turn on all the lights.
She heads directly for the center of the wall across from the bar, zeroing in on the photograph of Willie Nelson.
Damn, I didn't bring a screwdriver. There's a toolbox in the office.
She steps away from the picture, but I pull out my pocket knife. I got this. I move to the frame and use the tip of the blade to remove the screws holding it onto the wall. Together, we lift off the dust-covered picture of Willie. Ripley flips it over, and at first, I see nothing but the back of a yellowed sheet that looks like it came in the frame. But when Ripley peels it away, another piece of paper falls free. What is that? I squint at it as she focuses the flashlight on the faded handwriting.
I don't know.
She scans the paper and locks onto the signature at the bottom.
Holy shit, it's a letter from my mama.
She begins to read it out loud.
If you're finding this, I'm guessing I'm not around anymore. There have been plenty of days I've thought about what it would be like to do the deed myself, but I couldn't leave my little girl alone in this world.
Ripley blinks, tears shimmering in her eyes.
Oh my God.
She deserves better than this life, and I'm trying to give it to her. I know everything's thinking the worst, but sometimes you have to let them smear you if there's a bigger purpose down the road. I've never cheated on my husband, not with anyone, including Gil. Despite what everyone's saying, I'm not pining away hoping he'll leave his wife. I don't feel that way about him. He's just a nice customer who saw me with bruises one too many times and finally forced me to tell him what was going on. It takes a lot out of a woman's pride to admit she hasn't walked out on the man who hits her. Gil wanted to help me make a future outside this bar, and I've been hoping that's what my songs will do. I figured if anything happened to me, at least the money would end up going to my baby girl. Who's ever reading this letter, can you make sure she knows I did it for her?
Who knows? Maybe one of them will end up a number one hit, and she'll never have to worry about money for the rest of her life. All she has to do is talk to Gil, and he'll make sure she gets what's coming to her.
He set up a fancy trust so Frank can never get his hands on a dime of it. He's gotten enough from me. Blood, sweat, tears. I'm done with it. My bag is packed and tomorrow I'm finally doing it. I'm leaving my husband and I'm taking my baby girl with me. I don't know what's going to happen, but the feeling in my gut tells me that having a backup plan might be smart. I just hope I don't lose my nerve. Either way, I'd be really grateful if you'd make sure this letter gets to Ripley Fisher. She always deserved better than everyone calling her mama a whore, but at least this way she'll know it wasn't true. I'm not the type to be unfaithful. I'm better than that. All I want is for my baby to have a life where she can hold her head high and be proud of where she came from. If something happens to me, all you need to do is look close to home. Frank is on a hair trigger, and I've always wondered if he'd just push me down the stairs one day and be done with it. But I'm too useful to put out of commission permanently, I suspect. Then there's Laura Lynn waiting in the wings to step into my place. She always wanted what I have, so my leaving should make her really happy. She's welcome to Frank, since she always said he should have been hers to begin with anyway. I'm done. Rhonda Fisher. P.S. Tell my girl I love her. She's the best thing that ever happened to me. Tears are running down Ripley's face when she meets my gaze in the darkness of the bar.
She wasn't...
Her words are interrupted by a hiccup.
How could I not have known all this time? I thought...
The lights to the bar flip on, momentarily blinding us both.
You thought exactly what we all thought.
42. Aunt Laurelin comes toward Boone and me, a gun in her hand.
and what everyone else is going to keep on thinking. So just drop that right on the floor and back up. Then you're going to tell me where that diamond ring is Brandy said you stashed here. My brain is working overtime, trying to put the pieces together. Mama thought Laurelin wanted Pop. Pop was out in the bar when she was killed. And as far as I know, the cops never questioned my aunt about the murder. Why? I breathed the word. Laurelin waves the gun. I didn't open it up to question and answer time. Now give me whatever it is you've got there, and tell me where the damned ring is. All the saliva in my mouth dries up as I focus on the barrel of the old pistol, and memories come crashing together in my brain. It's the gun Pop always kept behind the bar. He used to let me watch him clean it sometimes. It went missing when Mama was murdered and was never found. The cops presumed it was the murder weapon, which is why they took Pop in for questioning, even though he was making drinks when the murder happened. Where did you get the gun, Laurelin? My aunt centers it on me. Been carrying it around a long, long time. I didn't even have to ask her if she did it. I know she did. And then she hugged me afterward and bought me a goddamn Happy Meal. Why? She was leaving anyway. If you wanted Pop, she was going to let you have him. Moon stills beside me, and I can almost hear him cursing me in his brain. I didn't know that. I didn't know until we found a damned packed bag upstairs and it was already done. But how? I was the first one inside and there was no one else in the bathroom. None of it makes any sense. When I skidded to a halt on the tile, there was only Mama and Gil, dead on the floor. Laurelin shakes her head at me and laughs. Says who? I jumped on the toilet in the stall and closed the door. When you ran out, you snuck out and pretended to break down when you saw them. She shakes her head. Something like that. It wasn't like I planned it. Frank was drinking as much as he was serving, so I took the gun from behind the bar and tucked it in my pants because I didn't trust him not to shoot up the place. Maybe I should have let him. And then I walked into the bathroom and saw them in there together, and I couldn't stand to see her humiliate her Frank one more time under his own goddamn roof. He deserved better than that. He stayed by her, even with the rumors going around. The confession crashes into me, and I'm horrified to finally hear the truth. Before I can think of a single thing to say, Laurelin waves the gun around. Tell me where you hid that damned ring. Brandy said that rock is worth at least 10 G's, and I need the money more than either of you. Boone finally speaks. Ma'am, I'll give you all the money you want and you can get the hell out of here. All you have to do is put the fucking gun down. Shut your mouth, boy. I didn't ask you. Mama, are you down here? Brandy's voice comes from upstairs before I hear the creak of footsteps on the old treads. Oh, shit. I don't know how Aunt Laurelin's going to cover up this one, but I know there's no way in hell she'll shoot her own daughter. I look to Boone, but his eyes are fixed on the gun that wobbles in Laurelin's hands as she glances toward the stairs. Hold on, girl. I'm coming back up. The treads keep creaking. I told you to wait upstairs, Laurelin yells at Brandy when she hits the bottom step. My aunt's arm bobs as she looks away, and Boone launches himself at her, tackling her to the floor like he did with the rodeo clown. A shot explodes from the gun, deafeningly loud. Both Laurelin and Boone go still, and Brandy shrieks. No! I scream and bolt toward them. I can't handle a replay of what happened at the rodeo, and I'm not losing another person I love in this goddamn bar. Before I can drop to my knees, Boone rolls off my aunt, keeping both her hands pinned over her head. Thankfully, I don't see blood coming from him. Oh my God, are you okay? Yeah, he grunts before he knocks Laurelin's hands against the floor, and she finally releases her grip on the gun.
Help!
Brandy's wail finally gets through to me, and I see her on the floor at the base of the stairs, dark red staining her pink shirt. But how? I rush to her side. Where are you hit?
I don't know. What's going on? Who has a gun?
Call 911,
Boone orders from where he has my aunt pinned to the floor. He looks to Brandy and then back to me.
Must have been a ricochet or something.
Brandy! Aunt Laurelin yells, and Brandy's gaze cuts to her mom.
Mama, you shot me? I told you to stay upstairs,
Laurelin spits out. Like I did with Boone at the rodeo, I sacrifice my shirt and use it to put pressure on Brandy's wound.
Hold this on there, tight. I'm calling for an ambulance.
Once I get a dispatcher on the line and fill her in on the situation, Brandy lifts the shirt off the wound. At the sight of her own blood, her eyes roll back in her head and she slumps to the floor, unconscious. When I relay that to the dispatcher, the woman promises help is on the way. The cops get there first, then the PI with Pop in tow. Apparently, they figured out the clues in the lyrics and were coming to investigate the bar too, but they didn't expect to walk into pandemonium.
Jesus fucking Christ. Is someone gonna tell me what the hell happened here?
43. Hours later, after being interviewed by multiple cops, telling our stories over and over, and listening to Ripley's father being questioned, Ripley and I are finally allowed to go home. She's been holding it together like a champ, but I know the break is coming. I can feel it. It happens as we pull into the garage at my house.
Her own sister?
I hop out of the truck and open Ripley's door to lift her into my arms and carry her inside. Ripley's father confirmed to the police that 20 years ago, his sister-in-law had indeed told him that his wife was having affairs. Since the man apparently doesn't know how to handle anything head-on, his solution was to drown himself in the bottle and take out his anger on his wife and daughter. He never even confronted Rhonda to find out if it was true. After Rhonda and Gil Green were murdered, Laura Lynn had offered him more than a shoulder to cry on for comfort. Frank had been adamant when he said there was no way he would have touched his sister-in-law. He wouldn't even look at her because she looked too much like his dead wife and he didn't want any reminders. He never realized that by telling Laura Lynn to pack her shit up and leave, he was giving her the perfect out to escape the consequences of her actions. Brandy wasn't shot. The bullet had gone wild and shattered a picture across the room, sending a piece of glass flying that sliced into her like shrapnel. Physically, she was fine after being patched up with a butterfly bandage, but watching her mother being led away in handcuffs had left her unhinged. I can still hear her screaming at her mama that she always knew she didn't love her enough. Laura Lynn hit back, telling Brandy she would never have come back to Nashville if it weren't for the bar and Frank. We could hear Brandy's hysterical screeching even as we left the building. Now, Ripley's tears soak my shoulder as she sobs. I sit down on the couch in the living room where the sheet music still lies on the table and hold her on my lap. She snuffles and hiccups before lifting her head.
I've thought the worst of her all these years. I never once thought there was a chance that she didn't cheat. What kind of daughter am I?
Sugar, you can't blame yourself for that. You thought exactly what you were told to think as a kid. Why would you have questioned it? The evidence was all right there, supporting everything you were told.
But they were wrong, and God, I feel like I don't even know who I am right now.
I'll tell you who you are, the strongest, most incredible woman I've ever met. She rocks against me.
That's not true. I never once thought, and the truth was right there.
And you saw it. You found it. You put the pieces together, and now you can tell the world what really happened if you want.
If Laura Lynn had just stayed away.
I glance at the sheet music on the table. I suspect the private investigator probably shook her loose and had her starting to worry, plus she said she couldn't pass up the chance to make some easy money at the bar. Coming back to the scene of the crime let her keep an eye on things, just in case the PI was getting too close. Ripley nods.
What happens now?
They charge her, and hopefully she pleads guilty.
If she doesn't, then we've got a whole public circus of a trial.
My shoulders tense at the thought. That's the last thing she needs right now, and I hope like hell the confession from Laura Lynn and our statements will be enough. No matter what happens, we'll face it together. You and me, Sugar. A package deal, and one hell of a team. Ripley meets my gaze, her stormy eyes even cloudier than normal, with the sheen of tears.
Why would you throw yourself at her? She could have killed you.
Her panic is delayed, but not surprising. You think I wouldn't take a bullet for you? You charged a pissed-off bull for me.
I didn't think,
well, I did, and there was no way in hell I was going to live the rest of this life without you. If letting her shoot me would keep you breathing, then so be it.
You really do love me.
Ripley says, her tone hushed. You're just figuring this out. She shakes her head and wraps her arms around my neck.
No, but don't you dare ever do anything like that again. I need you breathing to be happy. So let's work on both of us staying alive.
Deal, I tell her, as I press a kiss to her lips and lift her into my arms. Esteban cocks his head at us and fluffs his wings.
Lovebirds!
The damned parrot always gets it right. 44. Nashville cold case solved. Guidebooks got it wrong. 20 years later, the questions surrounding the murder of country legend Gil Green have finally been put to rest, and it's not what the guidebooks told you. Rhonda Fisher, late wife of Frank Fisher, proprietor of the infamous Fishbowl Bar, finally got her say. A letter from the slain woman was entered into evidence at the trial of her sister, Laura Lynn Lear, who agreed to a plea bargain. Sentencing is scheduled for later this week. Fisher's daughter, Ripley, now finds herself in the spotlight for a completely different reason. She and country music darling Holly Wicks have released a brand new duet. Don't Tell Me No debuted at number one on the country charts and is the first single off Ripley Fisher's freshman album, Finding Myself, which is slated to release next month. Fisher has also been making headlines as the woman at country music bad boy Boone Thrasher's side. The couple recently made a hefty joint donation at a Nashville pet shelter where the couple adopted a dog. Thrasher announced yesterday that he and Fisher will be touring together next year. Thrasher's latest album hits stores in 2 weeks and is rumored to include several songs written for Fisher. The release of the latest single gives credence to that, as fans were stunned when they learned the chart-topping hit was actually a marriage proposal. Fisher publicly stated that since Thrasher put the question in a song, he'll have to wait for her answer in one, too.
Epilogue. 3 months later. My gaze darts from one person to the next while Boone tries to explain the Karras family tree to me, but I'm lost. I don't think it's crazy, because I dare anyone to try to figure this out during the course of one baptism. How many secrets can one family have? Apparently, when it comes to the Karras family, a lot. Creighton's sister, Greer, and her husband, Kavanaugh Westman, a guy I've only previously seen in movies, accept the solemn duty of being godparents to the squirming baby in white lace. Rose and I are quite well acquainted now that I spend a good deal of time at Homegrown Records. After all, once a baby spits up on you, there's a sort of bond that's formed. Less official, but still sacred. It's not until after Rose is placed back in Holly's arms, and the remainder of the standing, sitting, and kneeling happens, that the service is over, and we follow the crowd to a massive, fancy white tent set up behind the church. At least a dozen men wearing dark suits are set up as security, and one checks identification for a second time before letting us in. They have more security here than they did last week, I whisper to Boone. Last week, we attended an event that was so incredibly surreal, I still can't believe it actually happened. I walked down a red carpet, and while I've done that before, it never gets old. And then I performed at a freaking awards show. I was so insanely terrified, but the woman proudly watching as her baby is passed around today calmed my nerves by giving me a slightly creepy alternative to picture them in their underwear. Just pretend that if anyone says or does anything mean, Cray will make sure they disappear. Staring at all the security, especially the guys flanking an older man who looks like he stepped straight out of The Godfather, I'm starting to wonder if Holly wasn't joking. Before I can quietly ask Boone if bullets are going to start flying, the older man walks up to Creighton, who has reclaimed baby Rose, with open arms.
The first of a new generation. She's a perfect little princess.
Holly steps forward. Dom, don't you even start. Cray already spoils her something fierce.
She's my granddaughter, and I'll spoil her however I want,
Dom replies as he leans forward to press a kiss to each of Holly's cheeks.
She is perfection. You have done us proud, my dear.
A heavily tattooed man, at least I assume he's heavily tattooed, because even his thick beard and man bun can't hide the ink curling up out of the collar of his shirt, wraps his arm protectively around the woman to the left of me.
You just wait. When he finds out I knocked you up, he's gonna send his goons down for a shotgun wedding.
Shh. I'll tell him when we're ready. Not a minute before. The woman covers the tattooed hand on her belly with her own as she looks around. She catches my gaze on her and raises an eyebrow. You're sworn to secrecy. I may not look tough, but I was a mob princess before mob princesses were cool. She blinks. Wait, maybe they've never been cool. Okay, yeah, scratch that. We're still not cool. At least I'm not. The tatted-up guy's body is visibly shaking with laughter.
Calm down, Cupcake. I'm sure they're not going to narc on you.
He turns and holds out his hand to me.
I'm Bishop. This is Eden. I can also attest to the fact that she's pretty damn cool.
Boone and I both shake his hand. I recognize you. You had a spread in Inked Life this month. Eden claps her hands. That's definitely him. See, babe, you're famous now. She glances at Boone's tattoos, also not completely covered by his suit. You should come down to Nola. Voodoo Ink is the best tattoo shop around. Boone looks over at me.
Maybe if I can talk her into marrying me, we'll head down there as a honeymoon. I've always loved New Orleans.
I elbow Boone in the ribs, but softly, kinda. Would you stop saying that to people?
What? That I've been carrying around a ring for 3 weeks, but you still won't give me an answer?
I roll my eyes. Don't listen to him. He isn't carrying a ring. He just likes to joke.
Oh, sugar. Someday you're gonna realize I don't joke around with shit when it comes to you.
I shoot him a shocked look, but secretly I'm thrilled because I've got a newly recorded song on my phone, finally perfected and ready for Boone to hear. Eden looks from me back to Boone. Looks like you're going to have some interesting conversations after this. Boone pulls me into his side.
Every conversation with this woman is interesting.
Before I can reply, a ruckus of some sort breaks out at the entrance to the tent, and two security guys have a third man by the arms.
Get your fucking hands off me.
The restrained man is the epitome of tall, dark, and scarily handsome. Creighton hands Rose to Holly and strides toward him.
What the hell are you doing here, Cannon? You weren't invited.
A hush sweeps over the crowd in the tent, and the two men eye each other like they should be holding pistols at 20 paces, or however many paces dueling pistols require.
We need to talk, Cray. And you decide my daughter's baptism is the right place. Get the hell out.
The older man, Dom, watches the scene with interest.
Just hear me out. I don't have to do a damn thing. 5 minutes,
Cannon says from between clenched teeth, and I get the feeling this is taking a toll on his pride. Holly steps up to Creighton's side. Talk to him, but do it somewhere else so our guests can enjoy the afternoon and not watch the two of you beat the hell out of each other. Creighton's stiff posture doesn't relax, but he strides out of the tent with a clipped, "Follow me," tossed over his shoulder. Once they're gone and the crowd in the tent resumes chatting quietly, Holly, Greer, and Cav join Boone and me, where we stand with Eden and Bishop. Anyone else want to lay odds on how that turns out? Greer asks. Cav looks down at her.
Really, babe?
What? It's not like they're going to kill each other. They went into a church. I'm pretty sure even God wouldn't hesitate to strike Cray down for that.
Oh, shush! Cray knows that it wouldn't be God he'd have to worry about. I'd kill him myself if he did that on Rose's baptism day,
Holly says with a smile in her voice. These people are all nuts. That's my official opinion. By the time we walk toward my gorgeous and completely restored javelin an hour later, Creighton has returned and the other man disappeared. Do you think? Boone snags the keys from my palm.
I don't want to know.
I lunge for the keys. Hey, my car. I drive.
Not this time, sugar. I'm driving, and we're not going home until I get the answer I want.
I smile, smug with the knowledge of my secret. Fine, but I'm picking the music. This concludes the reading of Real Sexy by Megan March. Copyright 2017. This book was read by Elena Wolf and Sebastian York. You can learn more about Megan March at meganmarch.com. This unabridged recording was produced for Blackstone Audio in 2017 by Megan March, who holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.